This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You know, no one talks about what it's like to go pro. You know, there's life leading up to pro, and then there's life after pro. It's about getting your scholarship into college, getting drafted, and then boom, you're on your own.
Before they get in your business, be in charge of your business. Own it, cause it's your business, business. Handle all of your business, value all of your business. You say you're minding your business, my business.
What's up? What's up, good people? Welcome to Montgomery & Co. Man, listen, we have some GMs come on the show. We've had rappers come on the show. We've had professional athletes come on the show. Well, today coming on the show, we have a co-founder. Paul Rabil is coming on the show. He co-founded the Premier Lacrosse League. He's going to come on and talk lessons in sports. I mean, this is an MVP, a two-time MVP, seven-time champion coming on to talk. He also has a book out, the author of The Way of the Champion, Pain, Persistence, and the Path Forward. Going to have a great conversation with him. And then I'm also going to talk a little bit about just the process of sports and drafts and business and everything. It's all connected. Let's get it. I know that the Final Four just happened and everyone's thinking about that, but I think about my post-Final Four. What does that look like for the athletes? Especially, I'm going to focus on the women's side of it. So if y'all don't know, I'm just giving everybody a crash course. I'm sorry to my women's basketball listeners. I know y'all know all about this, but in the women's side of the game, we have a quick transition. Our season is in the summertime. It's not like the men. So when we have our Final Four, I remember with my Final Four my senior year, we went all the way. And so that means you go to the last day possible. Well, the draft is around the corner then. I remember I think I had 2 to 3 days after I had our championship game. We went back to UConn. We had the parade. We did all of those things, all those celebrations. And then I was on a car on the way to the WNBA draft. 2 to 3 days after the Final Four. It's not going to be as tight this year on the women's side, but the Final Four this year is April 15th. I mean, April 15th, and it's already star-studded. I mean, I know that I've even read some tweets that said on the NBA side, a lot of the NBA scouts and GMs are saying that this isn't the strongest draft class they've ever seen on the men's side. It might be a weak draft class on the men's side. Oh, baby, that is not the same. That is not the same for the women's side. On the women's side, it is a star-studded, knockdown, drag-out draft class. I'm talking about talent on talent on talent. Everyone knows that Caitlin Clark is going to be the number one pick. There's no spoiler alert here. Indiana Fever has been talking about it. They like, hey, get your tickets, man. If you enjoying this Iowa game, go get your tickets, boy. She coming here. They're not saying that she's coming here part because they probably just can't say that yet. But we know what's good. Caitlin Clark will be your number one draft pick. But you also have people like Camila Cardosa who has declared for the draft. Again, as I'm recording this, this is a week in advance. I'm just being transparent so that I'm sure that there's going to be a lot more people that declare for the draft. It's star-studded. The WNBA draft is actually going to be now. It's a different format than we've ever had before. The tickets sold out to the draft in 15 minutes. It's star-studded. And think about the transition for these women. So even in those 2 to 3 days when I graduated in 2009, in those 2 to 3 days, you're looking for your contract. I signed with Nike within those 2 to 3 days. I had to find my agent. I signed my agent within those 2 or 3 days. So right after the game, not only are you thinking about celebrating, turning up with your teammates, your coaches, this is your last year there at the university, it's time to get going. Now, it might be different for these athletes because when I played, there was no such thing as name, image, and likeness. So I couldn't have an agent. I couldn't already be talking to Nike and signing deals. But we know that some of these athletes have already have deals. Aaliyah Edwards, she's already signed to Adidas. like we already know AZ FUD, these players, some of these players already have shoe deals. We see Steph Curry has done some deals with players in South Carolina. There's a lot, there's already a lot more that they probably already have checked off their list. So they may have a different scenario, but nonetheless, that post Final Four turnaround, you have 48 hours after your last game to declare for the draft. So whether you're coming back or you're not, you got 48 hours after your last game. And if you do declare and you are going to the draft, then you're on the clock. It's a quick turnaround. And then not only that is that turnaround not quick, but you play your Final Four in April. Then you get drafted mid-April. You play your first WNBA game in May. So you could literally be playing for your college team in April and then the very next month be playing for your WNBA team. That's how fast it happens in the WNBA and for women's college basketball players. That's you talk about people hitting a wall. They say it all the time, you know, like the NBA has a long season. It does. 82 games is a long season. It's double the amount of our season, even more so than that, you know. They do hit a wall. But think about these seniors that come in from the Final Four, come in straight to the, because your top players are probably going to be the ones that are going to be top drafts too. So think draft picks too. So just think about that transition where you come off, you're on this roller coaster. You keep going up, 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 up. You're in the Final Four now. You only got two more games to win. You either win or you lose those games. And then boom, right after you win or lose, it's time to giddy up, get in gear. You don't know where you're going to be drafted to, but you got to be ready for whenever you do be get drafted. You know, like I'm just, it's a quick turnaround. And so you got the Final Four for the women's side that happens on April 5th. And then I think the championship game is on April 7th. And then you got the WNBA draft that happens on April 15th. 10 days, get ready. And when I say get ready, first of all, shouts to those commercials. I saw Arike Ogunbowale's commercial. I saw Stewie's commercial where they're basically talking to the rookies. I loved it. No shade. SPF 144. I love it. I love everything happening with the women's game. I love all the conversations happening on the women's game online. I love that these rookies, when they come in, the storylines are just going to flow. I love that I've seen fans online say, look, wherever Angel Reese gets drafted, that's my new favorite team. I love that. She hasn't even declared for the draft or not yet as I'm recording this podcast. I do not know if she's staying or going, but I love that fans are already getting ready to support in the WNBA, because that's been a thing for a while of there's just a rabid fan of college sports fans that live, sleep, breathe their college teams and their college players, their favorite players. But when those players go to the WNBA, we don't necessarily see that follow through or that carryover from I love this player in college, she's my favorite, to I love this player in the pros, she's my favorite, and I'm going to follow and watch all of their games. There's been plenty of people when they see me be like, oh my gosh, Renee, you're my favorite player at UConn. What team do you play for again? And I'm like, oh my God. It's like, what? I wish that they knew. I love that they supported me at UConn, but I wish that they followed me to the pros. That was a problem for the WNBA for a while. I think that that's not going to be a big problem anymore. I think that the volcano will erupt. I think that fans will just start to just wonder, wow, I wonder how that player is doing in the pros. I'm going to go watch and see. Wow, my favorite player is this player. I got to go follow them to the Atlanta Dream when they go there. I got to. How could I let this player go? They're my favorite. I'm so happy to see that happening, and it's happening right now. So we got April 15th, the WNBA draft coming up. And then also, I mean, even in the basketball world, April 16th through 19th is the NBA play-in games, baby. What a time. What a time. It's about to be lit. And then y'all know the summertime is ours. It's up. Atlanta for the summer. And I'm going to be on my Mark Cuban this summer. I've already told you guys, I come in peace with passion. I'm going to be on my Mark Cuban. I'm going to be at like 90% of the away games. I'm on the team. Okay. I know I retired, but I'm on the team. I've always been all in, but this time I done worked my schedule to where I'm going to be traveling. We got a game on the road, babe. I'll be back. You know, I'm on the team. It's like, it's not even an option. I'm there. So if you see me in your city, say what's up. But it's up. I'm telling you right now. So it's a quick, I just want to give you guys a glimpse into the world of women's sports. It's a quick turnaround. There's a lot of new fans that are following women's sports. They don't know how things work. They might be like, wow, I didn't realize it's 10 days. I didn't even have 10 days, but I didn't realize that they have less than 10 days to get drafted and then move to another team and start another journey, another season after just climbing to the top of the Final Four. Yes, that's women's sports. That's WNBA. That's women's basketball. And what a time. Like, I was on a ride. I got drafted to Minnesota my rookie season. I went up there and I was ready to get back to work because you got to start over again proving yourself. You're a senior in college. Our team went 39-0. I go to the pros. Don't nobody care. No one cares that my squad went 39-0 and won a championship. You in the pros now, baby. Who cares? Giddy up. Get ready. So that's what it's going to be like. You have to keep proving yourself over and over and over. You had a good rookie season. All right. You better not have a sophomore slump. That's how it works. And then, oh, you was an all-star. All right. Can you do it again? All right, you were an all-star. Is your team good? Can you make the playoffs? Oh, okay, cool. You made the playoffs, but can you win a championship? That's what it's like for athletes. It's never, you never really make it, because even when you make it, you got to prove that you did it on purpose and that you can do it again and repeat. Because we know all the greats don't just win one. They win multiple, and they're winners. And you see that they won in high school. You see that they won in college. You see that they won in pro. They're a winner, and you always want to be a winner. So I just wanted to get you caught up in the world of what's about to happen, because yes, the Final Four is over and it's exciting and we loved everything about it. And I'm always going to bleed blue, baby. But also, what's it look like after? What's life after the Final Four? That's what I'm talking about. Even on the men's side, they go to work. They start working out for NBA teams. They start figuring out what they want to do. They start having to understand that, all right, either if you're some seniors, is my basketball career over? You know, we've been watching the press conferences for some of these athletes. It's the realization that you're no longer going to be a part of a team anymore. You go from every day, everything about your schedule is around being the best athlete and the best teammate you can be, to where you lose in the Final Four and your season's over. So that's also the reality for some seniors as well, the ones that are not going to be drafted on the men and women's side. You know, we see a lot of athletes, even in everybody get ready for WNBA preseason and WNBA training camps, because it's not easy to make the WNBA. We are one of the hardest, if not the hardest, pro sports league to make. There's only 144 spots. 144 spots. And already there's probably 130 of them are already taken. And that's putting, like, that might even be higher than that. There's just... So it's tough competition. So college sports fans, please be ready for maybe your favorite athlete to maybe not make a team. I don't know how else to put it. It's just the numbers of it all. I wish more players had more spots. That's why I'm glad for expansion. I'm glad what's happening with the league. We need to expand, because there's some hoopers out there that I want to be on teams. I wish could be on teams. It's a numbers game right now. Just not enough spots. So the growth is there. The fan base is there. You know, it's happening. And the players, they're already ready for the business, because they're doing big business NIL style in college. But it's all the same. NIL, sponsorships, it's just different wording. So they've already been doing it. So they're already ready for that aspect. They just got to get ready for the game. They got to get ready for the speed, the physicality. The WNBA players that are already there, that, I mean, they do this. It's the best of the best of the best. In the WNBA, there is no fat to nobody's game. These are the best players, period. There's no room. We only have 144 spots. Only the best survive. So good luck. Like, I'm rooting for all of the new seniors coming in that are going to be rookies. I'm rooting for y'all, because those are the worst conversations I've had, when I'm in the locker room, training camp, and somebody comes in the locker room after being cut. It's a rookie that, you know, they don't know what to think. They're used to being an All-American. They've never experienced failure to this level of not being on a team. They've never experienced having to not be wanted. And then they're coming in the locker room crying, and I'm still in there, because after every practice, I'm always shooting my normal shot routine, then getting the cold tub. So I'm usually one of the last ones in there. And unfortunately, I'm the one that's sitting there when they come in crying. Those are the worst conversations to have, because I always tell them, like, you know, your career isn't over. You know, with the WNBA, you can play with WNBA players or women's sports players. You can play overseas. You know, there's other options. There's Athletes Unlimited now. You know, your playing career isn't done, but it is a big blow to an All-American to not make a WNBA team. So I'm rooting for all the rookies, man. I hated those conversations. It's the worst. You know, I can't, like, I wasn't in that experience as far as WNBA, but I've been cut from a USA basketball team. It's no fun. It's no fun when you give everything and you're used to being one of the best, not even just on the team. Like, I'm used to being on the team. I'm used to having an impact on the team. And you mean to tell me you don't even want me on the team? That's what some of the rookies are going to feel. So I'm rooting for the rooks, man. I'm rooting for them to show up and show out. And, you know, it's hard to do when you're in a new environment, new team, new coach, new teammates, trying to learn the plays, and it's moving fast. They're teaching a lot of plays quickly. What is this terminology? It might not be the same. It's a quick learning curve. So I'm rooting for the rooks, man. And it's that's the thing about sports. It's cutthroat, it's fast paced, it's competitive, and that's why we love it. So like I said, I'm rooting for all the rooks, and I'm also rooting for all the vets, man. Hold your own. Let's go. Coming up next, we have Paul Rabil, the co-founder of the Premier Lacrosse League. He has a book out called The Way of the Champion, Pain, Persistence, and the Path Forward. And he talked about lessons in sports like life after college as an athlete. And we know a lot of these athletes are going through that right now with the conclusion of March Madness. And shouts to my UConn Huskies winning their sixth national title on the men's side. Let's go! Paul's coming up next.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We got Paul Rabil on. He's athlete turned entrepreneur who honestly reinvented professional lacrosse by co-founding the Premier Lacrosse League in 2018. Paul, my man, has a book out, The Way of the Champion, Pain, Persistence, and the Path Forward. And honestly, it's star-studded. I mean, like, you have names of people in there that y'all all are going to know. Mark Cuban, Serena Williams, Bill Belichick wrote the foreword. If this was a TV show, the star power would be all the way through there. Steph Curry has had some rumblings in there. Abby Wambach. I'm just saying, like, how did this all come together for you to – you got a lineup, Paul.
I was about to say, like, I'm really honored to be on the show. I've looked up to you and so many athletes and coaches – that have not only won at the highest level, but also transitioned, you know. And I would say what's helped me as an athlete is studying others. You know, I say most athletes, they're not inventors, they're chemists. Mm. In the end, my play on the field was unique to me, but I studied my predecessors around the game and features of the game that I loved. And then that went out further beyond lacrosse and watching point guards and hoops, quarterbacks and football, center midfielders and soccer. So that curiosity was something that I would just write. You know, the way that I learned was writing in journals. I have like three dozen journals over my career. And then as I got into the world of business, I launched a podcast probably 7 years ago and started building relationships with a lot of the athletes, entrepreneurs, entertainers that I reference in this book. And, you know, I think through my experiences growing up and what I now hope to impart on the next generation are these in the form of lessons, you know, because there is no blueprint. Each of our journeys are different.
Yeah.
However, there are things that we can pull from champions that came before us and potentially apply them to what we do. And that's the guide. That's the focus, is not to say you have to do this or you need to do that. It's this worked for this person this way and this worked for that person that way.
I love that, because everything, it's not a one size fits all in sports. Like, everybody's journey is different. Everybody's success pathway is different. I mean, but you've had a lot of success, Paul. Two-time MVP of the Major League Lacrosse, seven-time champion. Success, I always talk about, is a habit, and you can kind of see, like, I love when there's the bright lights because that's when the stars shine the most.
Yeah.
The women's side of March Madness was crazy. Iowa played LSU. UConn played USC. It was star-studded. Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, Paige Bueckers, Juju Watkins. Please tell me you watch. What are your thoughts?
100%. You know, I watched last year as well, like everyone else, and seen the LSU-Iowa rivalry come back. I think the personalities in women's sports and the play is just so, it's so attractive to people. And it's being, I think, broadcasted the right way by ESPN, supported with shoulder programming, which we often talk about, like, let's dive into the story of Caitlin Clark. Let's understand why she is as competitive as she is, and talk about, honestly, the good and the bad.
Yep.
That's what, as fans, we are interested in. You know, and when I think about my career or the greats like Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Sue Bird, Abby Wambach, one of the things we all have in common is we lost a lot of big games and had terrible career threatening injuries, played like shit when it mattered most. It's actually the opposite of what people think when they look at great athletes and entrepreneurs is that, oh, they're so successful, it must be nice. They actually just have a lot more resilience than most. And we're all afforded that opportunity every day to respond. And so Bill Belichick, second losingest coach in NFL history, has 8 Super Bowls. Peyton Manning threw and still has the record for most interceptions as a rookie with 28. Martin Brodeur gave up the most saves as an NHL goalie, or gave the most goals. Cy Young gave up the most saves as a pitcher, right? I talk about Vincent Van Gogh as never sold a painting while he was alive.
Crazy.
Michael Jordan missed over 9,000 shots in his career, famously quoted for that. Like, that is the journey. That is the work, is how you respond to the losses. And now, coming back to your question, Caitlin Clark has been thinking about that loss last year and that moment. And I was having some conversations with a few people earlier this week. Like, I bet on that mentality. I like to bet on that mentality.
The storylines around the game. And for a long time on the women's game, you said shoulder content. I'm making sure people understand that's the shows, the content that goes around. We're not just turning on and the game starts at 7 p.m. and that's all we get. Now we got an amazing pregame show with Shanae, Andrea, and Elle Duncan, friend of the show. We have storylines coming out about Angel Reese, and we have storylines coming out about Paige Bueckers. You know, she was hurt for 2 years, dreamed about getting to this point. She had an amazing, amazing quote where she said, I'm paraphrasing, but I did all I can so that God can do all I can't. Like, she just, you can see these redemption stories. And then you can also see the growth. And the reason I'm talking about the growth is because the growth in women's sports and women's basketball, 2 years ago, we couldn't say March Madness. You grew your sales 20% for ticket sales for PLL. You know what that growth is like to get a fan base now engaged. You're doing it with your premier lacrosse league. Talk about, like, just the growth and building that fan base and just scaling, because I think people don't understand, like, it's not easy to scale a league, and you're a co-founder of a league.
Yeah, it's so hard. I appreciate you saying that. So a couple comments when it comes to women's sports. And I think about my career over the last 20 years of playing on the men's side. I remember meeting Pat Summitt at a White House celebration for the Tennessee Volunteers winning however many they did. She had the same temperament, level of compete, and drive that a Coach K, Greg Popovich, Steve Kerr had. And I remember walking away from meeting her just being like, damn, I'm so inspired. And one of the best women at the time was Rebecca Lobo, who's calling games now, talking about the transition from an athlete to the next phase of your life. I think about women's soccer. You know, I grew up watching Brandi Chastain and Mia Hamm and Julie Foudy and all the women who set the bar so high for sports around the world. And then what that did to women's soccer, which is still continuing to grow. But you have Megan Rapinoe and Alex Morgan, who have bigger audiences than most male athletes, you know? And so that type of stuff to me is inspiring. I learn from it and I apply it to what we're doing in lacrosse, which in a lot of cases has been underserved, underserviced, under-marketed, under-resourced. That's one of the reasons why we started the PLL, is that I had been playing professionally for 10 years and watching the UFC and Major League Soccer that were once on par with pro lacrosse in America just take off. And to that point around growth in ticket sales, when I try to distill the importance of being an athlete or your trajectory of wanting to win a championship, be a great athlete, same thing in entrepreneurship, you got to do the ab work. You got to do the stuff that people try to avoid. Ab work is so hard because it's at the end of the workout. It's like a marathon. You don't really see the results as you do when you're doing upper body or lower body.
I would have thought leg day would have been the part that's the people don't want leg day.
Oh yeah. Well, they ain't it then, you know, if you can't lean into leg day, man, those are the things that make the difference. But so your core work, I've never seen an exercise more frequently skipped than that. And something like ticket sales, it's so hard. I mean, we live in an environment with social media, which has given us a great opportunity at large to have a conversation with people and draw attention and draw new fans. But when it comes to hosting an event, I mean, I think about how stressful it is having a birthday party where you're supplying food and drinks and you're still nervous if people are going to show up. When you're asking them to pay for parking, buy their food, buy expensive drinks, sit out in the heat on a summer day, watching a lacrosse game, you got to know the product and you got to believe in it. And you've got to, you know, be a really good salesperson. And if you can sell a ticket in our business, you can do anything.
Yeah.
And I think it's the best path in for anyone looking into the business of sports, is learn how to sell tickets. For athletes, it's the monotonous work. It's every day shooting from the paint. It's every day against the wall. That type of stuff is not as glamorous as the games, but we spend more time in empty stadiums working on ourselves than we do playing in front of packed stadiums for a championship.
That's facts. Like, it's crazy. I love hearing it because I talk all the time about, like, I have a brand, C-Suite 21, clothing line's coming out fall, but the concept is that athletes turned whatever, you know, like athlete turned entrepreneur, athlete turned artist, athlete turned actor, because the things you're talking about, every athlete is going to relate to what you're talking about. We know them ugly hours in the gym. I talk about it kind of often. So listeners on the show know that I talk about those ugly hours, even in a sense of, you had a documentary out that came out, The Fate of a Sport. You have a podcast, The Suiting Up Pod. You have your book coming out, The Way of the Champion. I'm the kind of the similar to you in a sense of, it's a lot of self-promotion. It almost feels like, how do you handle? Because I'm like the worst. Like, I do not like to promote myself or anything. My team is like, you need to post this, you need to post that. I'm like, I'm sick of me. I don't want people. How is it promoting yourself, man?
It's so hard. I'll say, like, you know, the first, there have been two stages of it. The first stage was, I found it actually enjoyable back in 2008 when I launched a YouTube channel, all the way till about 2015, because social media was more enjoyable back then as well.
Why is that? I'm curious. Why do you say that?
Well, it was more novel. The idea of seeing what Renee was up to or what type of workouts Paul was doing, like, we're fans of athletes, of teams, and the environment had yet to rear its ugly head around sort of the pitfalls of human nature, which is trolling and negativity and jealousy.
Yeah.
It was very supportive. And, you know, you layer that with, at the time I was playing pro lacrosse, there was no network deal. People weren't talking about the game after college. So it was more of like incumbent on me to promote the game through my experiences. So that's how I justified it in my head. It wasn't like promoting myself. I was promoting the game. Now I know the environment, sort of stage two of social, is just really hard. And frankly, you know, businesses and leagues and networks, a lot of them take the shortcuts and rely on our respective social media to soup to nut do the whole marketing campaign. You know, when you and I were growing up, if you got a deal with Nike or Adidas, they would pay a production house to shoot content for you. They would pay an editorial co to cover the endorsement. They would pay the wire so a press release goes out. And they would pay a network for spots and dots so that they know that the brand partnership was complete. And I feel like social media has, in a lot of cases in business, has become a shortcut. and it's not the path to take. Whenever I hear shortcut, I sort of like cringe. I'm like, nah, that ain't gonna be it. Right. There's no shortcut to,
I feel you.
To being great.
It's crazy. I love that you're saying this. Thank you for being transparent, by the way, because I think that people should hear this. I'm sure that there's content creators right now or influencers right now that feel like they're doing a lot, even to the concept of like people will understand. Remember when we used to see music videos, like a song will release and there will be a music video. If people don't understand why there's not music videos anymore, you're literally describing the concept of an artist might have a certain budget that they need to roll out their whole album with. Can they shoot an actual video with that budget? Probably not, because they're probably in charge of it. And so it kind of just, that's the entertainment world. Even seeing influencers, I don't know if you've noticed, but there's influencers now that are in a lot of TV shows, movies. Companies are trying to find ways to promote without maybe having as large of a marketing budget as they normally had. And so I think, like, you know, you being a co-founder, I'm an owner of a team, we have to adapt.
Yeah, totally. You have to come back to your why, you know, because what the world has told us today is that there are so many different ways to tell your story. It's never been more cost effective to launch a business because of social media and new technology. But there's also with that a lot of distraction. And so coming back to, as an athlete, all of a sudden, you know, no one talks about what it's like to go pro. You know, there's life leading up to pro, and then there's life after pro. It's about getting your scholarship into college, getting drafted, and then boom, you're on your own.
And you started writing your book while you were retiring from lacrosse, yeah. Right? Like, you kind of started writing it during that journey.
Totally. You know, there's three books inside of it. There's amateur, professional, and beyond the game. Some of the lessons in there are reoccurring, like hard work, like discipline, and then other lessons evolve. Right. When I was younger, the notion that you had to be the hardest worker in the room, and if you weren't putting in countless hours, someone was going to be nipping at your heels. When you're a pro, yep. If you want to play for 15 years, you've got to be mindful of high impact training, and a couple days off here and there are actually healthy. Right. And so I recount Jack Nicklaus as a golfer versus his son. Jack Nicklaus, 18 years into his career, hardly practiced. He focused on his mind, and his son was baffled because Jack would go out and beat him in four rounds. And he'd be like, "Dad, you haven't swung a stick since last week."
This is my son. I can't wait for my son to hear this, because when we go to the court, he always wants to do a little shooting. And I'm like, it's like riding a bike. Like, come on.
You hit those 10,000 reps, you know, so it's a part of you. And so you've got to get that. Amateur pro is about sort of professing your calling and going all in. And then beyond the game is service, is what are you doing when you're no longer playing, or how are you giving back to your community? That's the more, you know, rewarding and fulfilling stuff. And I think it, you know, gives us the perspective that you alluded to now, even around self-promotion. Is there's one of my favorite commercials was a Gatorade spot that they did with Abby Wambach when she retired. And the title of the spot was called Forget Me. And her note to the industry was the opposite of what athletes often talk about, is what's your legacy? How do you want to be remembered? She was like, my legacy is being forgotten. When people are not remembering who I am, that means the next generation has taken over. And that's really powerful for women's soccer and women's sports. You know, and I think about that quite a bit, because I cared so much about my legacy and about accolades and championships. And now, being beyond that part of my life, building a pro sports league, I know that our success is directly correlated to the industry, from networks to brands, sponsoring and talking about the next generation, which means I will be forgotten. And that means I've done my job.
That's crazy, though, to think about. Like, that's so forward thinking, because to your point, naturally, you might as an athlete want to be remembered forever. You know, that would be kind of the terms, but the game is growing. Like, see, that's the sacrifice that you have to make as a part of a league that's growing, because you're not going to hear an NFL player say that, because you don't have to worry about the NFL and its growth, because the NFL is a powerhouse already. But for people like us, where the women's sports game or the PLL league, we are trying to grow. And for us to grow means there needs to be people coming behind us. You're also involved in USA Lacrosse. And I'm curious, because you talk about leaders and you're interested in leaders, and your book is about lessons. So, you know, we always do like Mount Rushmore's of sports, but who's your Mount Rushmore of leaders? I'm just curious, like, who would you say, you've been around different sports, you've been around different athletes in different sports. I'm just curious. You got a book with lots of athletes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who's your Mount Rushmore of leaders?
Oh, man, you're asking me to pick my favorites.
yes. The thing we all hate. I hate when people ask me. It's like, oh.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, I was lucky to have Bill Belichick write his foreword. You know, and Bill's had an illustrious career and will continue to work as a head coach for an NFL team at some point. And he's also had his fair share of negativity and criticism, but he is, I think, the penultimate example of someone being able to distill down a complicated system and a really arduous road to winning a Super Bowl to do your job. And the discipline, the locker room culture that he built in New England. I mean, Martellus Bennett, is just like this brilliant artist now, was one of the top NFL tight ends. And when he came over to New England, he was like, man, shit was just different. He was like, we won the AFC championship. And I came in the locker room celebrating, and everyone was like, what are you celebrating for? We've got a Super Bowl to win.
They was looking forward.
That is a culture that someone like Bill has created. I think about Greg Popovich and Coach K. There's a chapter in my book called the 10-80-10 rule that both of them embodied, where most coaches focus on your top 10% because it's easier. Your best players, spending the most time with them, they're aligned with your mission, and they sort of execute on the drills and the plays called in games. A lot of coaches also focus on the bottom 10% and how many wind sprints the team runs because so-and-so missed a practice or missed a class earlier that morning. And what Coach K and Greg Popovich says, you're always, no matter what level you're at, you're always going to have a top 10 and bottom 10%. And your job as coaches is getting to 80%, more like your top 10%, because both sides are trying to attract. And so I think those two are really interesting to me. Magic Johnson, Howard Schultz, CEO of Starbucks, their biggest sort of like applauded characteristic is the ability to ask for help.
That's probably my worst attribute.
No, I get it, because it's cemented in us as athletes early on that if we ask for help, we either didn't study the playbook or don't know what to do, which the fear factor tied to that is we're going to get demoted.
Yeah.
And so it's an environment where it's like, oh no, if you ask for help, it's a sign of weakness, whereas actually a sign of strength and through vulnerability. I mentioned Sue Bird. We talked about Abby.
This is going to be a top 10. I like that, because I don't like to forget the top five. Give me the top 10.
I always think about Michael and Kobe, mm-hmm. you know, and their level of compete and gritting their teeth. You know, we talked about those long and sort of dark and cold hours that an athlete puts in to be great. What the best athletes do, I've found, is they create a reframe and love those moments.
Yeah.
I remember watching Come Fly With Me, which was Michael Jordan's documentary early on. And I just would close my eyes and listen to a scene where the lights hadn't come on in the auditorium yet. And he was just dribbling a basketball. He was the only one in there, and you either hear it hit the rim or nothing but net. And that type of environment, I love to show up to the field by myself and just listen and be in that space where you're like, okay, right, I'm doing the work. No one else is doing it.
And no one's outworking me. That feeling of no one's outworking me either.
No one's out. It's that little difference that top performers have.
He has a book out. He's the author of The Way of the Champion: Pain, Persistence, and the Path Forward. Listen to this man talk. So if you like that, because athletes, I talk about this all the time. Our lessons that we learned in sports, they directly translate to business. Like I didn't have any training for a lot of the things that I'm doing now, as far as like, how do you train to become a co-owner? How do you train to become a co-founder of a league? Like, how do you train for these things? You don't, but you just take the knowledge and the things that you know already inherently, and then you do your best, and then you work and you figure it out.
Totally. And one of the lessons that we always have to remind ourselves is it's an ongoing practice. You know, you don't learn to let go and then move forward. It's a recurring situation. You know, I had to let go when I was traded from Boston to New York so that I could be my better version in New York. I had to let go of a really, probably the most difficult thing I'd gone through was a really difficult divorce. And that was letting go of a relationship. And then I had to let go of the game when I retired. So what we learn is that it's just ongoing. And when in the minute we think we figured it out, life hits you with a big right hook and you realize, oh, shit, I got to do this again. But that's the beauty in it as well. Cause if it was always high, it wouldn't feel high, and we've got to feel the lows to know what it's like to win and feel the enjoyment of the works of labor.
One thing I learned long ago, never get too high, never get too low. Last thing before I let you go out of here, I talk about sports and entertainment all the time and how it just coincides and goes together. And I would be remiss, me being a Crown fan, to not mention, I know you're already Vanessa Kirby. You're in a relationship with Vanessa Kirby, who played Margaret. Oh my gosh. I was like, wait a minute. When Jeff told me that, I'm like, wait a minute. This is one of my favorite shows. What is that world? Like, they say I'm married to an artist as well. She's a singer. But what is that world? Like, I feel like we understand each other. Something there that makes us understand each other.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the entertainment industry is really difficult. It's like, it's performance. It's the same thing in sports. And for women in the acting business for a long time, it was incredibly ageist. There were very few exceptional starring roles that were made available. You know, a lot of the conversations that Vanessa and I have are akin to the conversations that are being had in women's professional sports in a lot of ways. The ability to relate to someone who goes really deep on their calling, you know, as athletes, the long, dark, cold hours. As actors, it's the hours and hours of research on a role in the library late at night, doing dream work, chemistry building. You know, directors are a lot like coaches. I find the sports world that we've all kind of lived and fell in love with is a lot like the creative world. And I'm sure you find that with your partner as well.
Yes, I love it. You guys, please check it out. If you haven't checked out his documentary, Fate of a Sport, check that out. But I love hearing you talk because I feel like we all live the same life as athletes. So if you like those lessons, if you want to know more athlete lessons, athlete thought processes, please go check it out. Paul is the author of The Way of the Champion, Pain, Persistence, and the Path Forward. I appreciate you joining me, Paul. This was dope.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I love what you do. And for those that are listening, I always DM Renee. I'm like, kind of like, dope, congrats on this. Love what you're doing here.
This is my social media. I tell people all the time, like, real relationships formed on social media. Like, I really believe in that. We have a real, we literally hit each other back and forth when something happens in the real world via DM. And here we are.
Sometimes it's the fastest way into communicating. And that's something that I've let go of and just embraced is like, yeah. I've got friends who just respond more on DMs than they do over text or phone calls.
I'm that friend. I appreciate you, Paul.
Appreciate you too. Thank you for having me.
Whew, man, what a time. Shouts to all the people that have came on the pod so far, because I love hearing everyone's perspective. I mean, we got Paul who's talking about what it's like from an athlete perspective to not even be seen, to have to create his own energy, create his own marketing, his own pub. And then we have him also talking about starting his own league because of that. Like, who does that? He reinvented a professional lacrosse league to make it how he wanted to see it. It's incredible. And then to just think about, you know, creating your own things. And that makes me think about what we created here with Meadowlark and Montgomery & Co. And having said that, we're going to be taking a little break, just a couple months break. We'll be back with it. Wanted to give a shout out to all of our Meadowlark media crew, team, everyone, because this journey has been dope. It's not over. We're just taking a little break. So this isn't goodbye. I'll see y'all in a little bit, all right? Y'all know it's always a generational thing over here at MoCo. See you next time.